It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Josh hits a high fly ball to center field deep. Back for it, Jerod Dyson. Does he have room? No, there she goes. Donaldson's 21st puts the Blue Jays in flight here in the first, leading the World Series champions 1-0.
It's At the Letters for Wednesday, July the 6th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. What's going on, buddy?
I like that intro. That's great.
A little fired up today.
Yeah.
A little fired up. A little fired up because we've been watching the Toronto Blue Jays and the Kansas City Royals play baseball for two nights. Two pretty good games to watch, actually.
Great games. Crisply played.
Right? Yep. Like, after the mayhem and depravity that was this weekend series, some pretty good baseball. Some pretty interesting baseball. Some great pitching. Aaron Sanchez, R.A. Dickey, pitching very well. Chris Young, perhaps not so well.
Perhaps not. Your game story was less forgiving. You're putting it very diplomatically right now.
Here's the thing about Chris Young. Every single batted ball, every single ball put in play came off the bat at 94 miles an hour or faster. Chris Young does not throw pitches above 90, 91. So if he even gets there. So the Toronto Blue Jays, when they put Chris Young's pitches in play, every single time they did so, they were adding velocity to the pitches with their bats.
Yeah.
Which tells you that they were just, like, everything was on the screws.
Yeah, and I think that the eye test would certainly back that up. I mean, watching those balls that, you know, Carrera hit out and Donaldson certainly hit out, it was a display of power. And I think the game, you know, the score wasn't close, but I think the game was even less close than the score might indicate.
Fair. Another person I want to pay a little homage to today, Sal Perez, catcher for the Kansas City Royals. We were talking about him the other night in the press box. I love Sal Perez, and I don't watch the broadcast much because I'm at the games, but I understand that. I think, you know, Buck and Tab, you've been giving him a lot of credit and talking about him a lot on the broadcast. I've seen some comments on Twitter about, oh, shut up about Sal Perez. No, don't shut up about Sal Perez. Keep talking about Sal Perez forever because he's amazing. He's the largest human I've ever seen in my life, and he's a catcher.
And he plays just about every day.
Every day.
So here's a question for you. So if you're starting a big league team, Buster Posey's the first catcher you're taking. I think that much is pretty obvious.
Yeah, in terms of current catchers, I'd say yeah.
But then is Sal Perez second? I would think he'd be front and center in that discussion.
I think he'd have to be. Yeah.
And
really,
he's clearly the best. I mean, he's starting for the American League in the All-Star game. He's clearly the best, or he's the catcher who's having the best season in the American League, well above Weeters or Martin or McCann. You know, it's impressive what he's been able to do. He's having a really good offensive year this year.
I'm trying to think if we're overlooking anybody, like
Yadier Molina.
Yeah, Molina, Yadier, maybe. But he's kind of old.
Wilson Ramos,
though,
having a great year.
He's kind of old. Sal Perez is like 26.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And it's incredible what he's able to do with his frame. Like, you look at him, like, he's kneeling behind the plate and his head is on level, like on par with Devin Travis standing up, right? Like, he's just so large. Like, back in Venezuela back in the day when they got everybody to the field and they were, like, assigning positions, and little Sal was like, I want to play catcher. And they said, okay, you can play catcher. And then little Sal was, like, 6'4" at 16.
Yeah.
Somebody had to be like, you know, maybe you don't want to play catcher. And he was like, nah, I got this.
Yeah.
I got it.
I love the photos of him beside Jose Altuve. Altuve's standing, Sal Perez is crouching, same height.
So, yeah, that's what I was just saying with Devin Travis, right? And, the thing is he plays every day and he hits, and you think about how hard it is to be a catcher and, like, what the abuse that your body takes. Like, if you don't think it's hard being a catcher, like, I would just ask you at home to just, when you're watching a game on TV, when every time Russell Martin crouches, crouch. And when he's not, you can stand up, you can sit down. Like, don't worry about catching, like, you know, Aaron Sanchez's 97 mile an hour two seamer and then curve balls that, like, bounce in front of the plate and rocket off your groin. And, like, don't worry about game calling and, you know, don't worry about having to go to the plate and take four at bats and trying to, you know, think about, you know, tendencies and things like that. Like, don't worry about any of that. Just crouch with the catcher and tell me how you feel the next day.
Yeah. It's insane.
It's crazy.
And that's why for a lot of these guys, not Sal Perez, of course, because he will be going to the All-Star game. But for a lot of these guys, this next week when you have that All-Star break is huge because you're used to getting one day off every 2 weeks. And then to get essentially 4 days, 4.5 days off all at once, it really is a huge break for these guys.
Ben, forcing the transition to the All-Star game. The All-Stars. The Toronto Blue Jays have three All-Stars. One of them is Marco Estrada. Another is Josh Donaldson. And then another is Edwin Encarnacion. They might have four. If Michael Saunders is voted in as the final vote candidate, I believe it's BlueJays.com/vote if you would like to participate in baseball democracy. That's how you can do that. And maybe we'll see some other Blue Jays if some people drop out with injuries, things like that. Maybe Aaron Sanchez gets some consideration. Maybe very, very, very outside shot that Jay Happ gets some consideration. What do you think about all this?
Well, I think there's a good chance that Sanchez makes his way in there. Yeah. And I think he should. He's had a great year. He's had an all-star year, in my opinion. I think he should be in the all-star game. And you look at the three guys who were selected. Donaldson, I mean, this is beyond obvious. Like, yeah. He's the best position player in baseball along with Mike Trout this year, yet again. He's got to be there. That's pretty clear. Encarnacion, the year he's having, the power that he has shown. And I think track record matters to some extent in these discussions.
He does.
A star. And so putting him in the game makes all the sense in the world. And I think Estrada, too, like the way he has pitched for the last year and a half now has shown that he's not fluking his way into this. There's a lot of skill behind it. And it's surprising because he's throwing 89, but it's still very effective and he deserves to be there as well.
Here's the thing about Josh Donaldson that I dug up last night when I was writing the game. Last night, Josh Donaldson hit a home run in the first inning off the first pitch of an at-bat. That was the sixth time that Josh Donaldson has homered this year on the first pitch of a plate appearance. So that's six out of his, like, it's 22.
22.
It's 22 right now. Six out of his 22. So now Josh Donaldson has put the ball in play 43 times on the first pitch of a plate appearance. 43 times. His triple slash line, putting those 43 pitches in play. He has a 500 batting average, 524 OBP because he's been hit twice, and a 1.050 slugging percentage for an OPS of 1.574.
It's crazy.
Which on the first pitch of at bats.
Yeah.
And it's happened 43 times. So like it's sure the sample is somewhat small, but it's not like ridiculously small.
Is he the first half MVP?
In the AL?
Yeah,
I would think so.
Yeah.
Him and Trout are right there. Maybe Altuve's in that discussion, but not really.
I think Altuve is legitimate in the discussion, and Machado too. Bogarts maybe.
Yeah. He's put up a better half season to this point than he did last year.
Yeah.
And he won the MVP last year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he is the MVP.
Yeah. He's clearly top five.
Oh my God, he's top three, two.
I think
he's top two.
I think he probably...
Him and Trout in the AL.
Yeah, Trout's having such a good year as well. I think it probably would be Donaldson. You look, he leads the league in walks. He's second in OPS to David Ortiz. Leads the league in wins above replacement. It's, you know, you look at the strikeout to walk too, and last year he struck out not a ton, but 133 times. And this year he's almost walking as much as he strikes out. Like his batting average is up, his on base percentage is up, his slugging's up. He's having just an insane season all around.
I wrote about this last night as well. It's underappreciated the fact that he's walked 57 times and struck out 64 times.
Yeah.
Like that's almost 1-to-1. And that's like a hard, hard thing to do and not something that he's ever done in his career. Even last year when he won the MVP, he didn't do that. He struck out a lot more than he walked last year. He's getting better.
He's played banged up at times too. If you look back at the calf injury early in the season, end of May, beginning of June, he had that thumb hand injury soreness there that he played through. So, I mean, yeah, I think that it'll be a few months before we know where this race is really going as far as awards and anything like that. But it wouldn't be surprising to see him legitimately win back-to-back MVPs.
Traded for Brett Laurie, Kendall Graveman, Sean Nolan, and Franklin Barreto.
Yeah.
That was the deal.
It's insane. And you know what? Now that we're talking about All-Stars, like you look at the Estrada deal for Adam Lind, that's another great deal for the Blue Jays that Alex Anthopoulos made at the time. And of course, Encarnacion was traded for as well. At the time, he was a throw-in in the trade. But all three of these guys trades, and then they end up paying off. Even Michael Saunders traded for Happ a couple seasons ago.
Yeah.
But all those deals have really paid off for the Blue Jays as far as giving them all-star players.
I would throw Liam Hendricks for Jesse Chavez into that consideration. It's a good trade. It's not just for an all-star, obviously, but like it, you know, that's a trade that worked out quite well.
Yeah.
When you look at it, looking back on it, with what we know about this season now, would you make that trade? No. If you're Oakland.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, definitely.
If you're Oakland,
definitely.
No shot.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting, too, like looking at where the Blue Jays All-Stars were drafted, it's a reminder of how long it takes for these guys to reach the big leagues in a way, where Encarnacion was drafted in 2000, and here he is enjoying his third All-Star season.
Estrada,
this is 2016, right? That's a long time ago. Estrada was drafted in 2005. Here he is as a first-time All-Star 11 years later. Even Donaldson, you know, drafted in 2007. That's 9 years ago. So it's just a reminder. And none of them were taken in the first 30 picks. So you just think to this year's draft, which happened, I guess, about a month ago, like it's going to take a while for these guys to develop into what they're going to be.
Unless you're Austin Matthews. And then you can ask our producer, Sam McKee. He's just immediately going to win an NHL scoring title and immediately going to win all the Hart, Selke. We'll give him the Vezina just because that's going to happen.
When you're that good on defense, you deserve the Vezina.
Edwin Encarnacion was drafted in 2000. It's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Like, I was 12. Jesus. Like, you know, like, that's crazy.
Yeah. It just takes a long time for these guys. And that's why, you know, we were talking about Vladdy Jr. A few minutes ago. And this is a guy who's still a teenager. It's going to take a long time for him to get to where he's going to be as a big league player, whatever that is, whether it's Pedro Alvarez, whether it's like his father, Vladimir Guerrero, or someone we completely forget and who never makes it in the big leagues. I think that it just takes so much patience.
It does. It does take patience. It is also taking patience for Troy Tulowitzki, for Blue Jays to see, I think, the real Troy Tulowitzki, which I think is what you're seeing right now. Turns out Troy Tulowitzki is really, really good at baseball. He's just been absolutely crushing the ball lately, making great contact. All, you know, ever since he came back from the DL, which was, as I look it up here, he came back on June 18th. And since then, Troy Tulowitzki has played 15 games. That's 67 plate appearances. Slash line of .339, .403, .729. A 1.132 OPS. He has 7 home runs in those 15 games. 7 walks to 8 strikeouts. He looks great.
Yeah, it's been impressive. It's been vintage Tulo and almost reminiscent of that run where I think he had 14 homers in 15 games at one point.
I remember that.
So this isn't quite that, but 7 and 15 I think will do for the Blue Jays. It's a reminder that even if he's not the Rockies era Troy Tulowitzki, he can still be a really effective offensive player for extended streaks. So I don't know exactly what to make of this, and I've kind of been going back and forth and trying to give him credit for what he's done while not forgetting what did happen in the first couple months of the year.
Yeah, I mean, he's on a hot streak. He's going to cool down. Like, that's going to happen. He's not going to have an OPS over 1,000 for the rest of the season. But if he cools down and settles in and over the rest of the season has an OPS of high 800s, I mean, that's Troy Tulowitzki, you know? Or even like, you know, just right around 900, a low 900 OPS. Like, that's, if you're the Blue Jays, you're just adding that to an offense that has Josh Donaldson, you know, going ham, has Edwin Encarnacion, you know, who has 2,000 RBIs before the All-Star break, who that's going to add Jose Bautista, you know, in about a month's time. That's sexy.
Where do you think Tulowitzki ranks in the scope of shortstops? I mean, he's been displaced as the best shortstop in baseball. That's Corey Seager right now, or Francisco Lindor, someone like that.
Correa?
Yeah, it could be Correa. One of those young guys. Is he in that next tier below? Bogarts, of course, will belong in that discussion. And I don't think Tulo's in that young guns group anymore, but is he in the next tier? Is he more middle of the pack? Where do you see him?
I don't know. Is Manny Machado a shortstop, or is he a third baseman? What is he?
Yeah, you know, yeah.
What is he? I don't know. I mean, you could, if he plays the way he's playing now, he's top tier.
Yeah.
Over the last 2 weeks since he's been back, 2.5 weeks, whatever it's been, that's top tier production. Everything he'd done in a Toronto Blue Jays uniform before that is like maybe even below the second tier, maybe low second tier, you know, like maybe around like kind of the, you know, like the, I don't know, like the Astrubal Cabrera, like range, or like, you know, like guys like that, like Espinoza type of guys, like maybe he was in that range, but you know, right now, top tier.
Yeah, he's playing really well, and he's run the defense, which has been really good.
Yeah.
So I guess
he was getting outplayed by Trevor Story for a long time, right?
For a very long time. All-star final vote candidate Trevor Story.
You have to think about that, right? This is a guy in his first year in the majors who took a spot in Colorado and went off.
I guess I'm just trying to still make sense of who exactly Tulowitzki is outside of Coors Field in the American League in a totally different setting. I guess we still don't know, or at least I still don't feel like I know what Tulowitzki is.
Fair. I think he's showing us right now. I mean, this is, like you said, vintage Tulo. You know, he's showing us what it is, and he can do this. What I'm seeing is that all of a sudden his plate approach has just gone 180 from where it was earlier this year. He's no longer swinging through, you know, bizarre pitches that he shouldn't be swinging through, like, you know, high fastballs and things like this that normally he crushes, and he was just swinging through earlier this year. He's not having trouble recognizing balls and strikes like he was earlier this year. I don't know what it was that has made that happen, but it seems like, you know, over that, you know, over his time away, he's just gotten right with that aspect of his game.
There's no question. He's been one of their best hitters for the last couple of weeks. It's impressive to watch. I mean, there's no question that you see him just hammer the ball. This isn't a wall scraper. This is the kind of power that allowed him to hit a couple hundred home runs as a member of the Rockies. I mean, it's way beyond what you'd expect from a shortstop. And I think playing in this park will help him.
So, those are some things that are good. Let's talk about a thing that is bad, and that's Marco Estrada's back. It was all too obvious in that start against the Indians that, like, this thing, you know, Marco Estrada's been carrying this back thing since spring training, basically. But, like, it really caught up with him in a big way against the Indians where, you know, I was watching that game, I think it was Saturday, and, like, he couldn't bend over to pick up the ball off the mound. Like, I was, in my head, like, just, you know, sending like telepathic notes to the umpire, like, just throw him the ball. Stop rolling it to the mound. He can't bend over and pick it up. He'd be walking off the mound after an inning to go back to the dugout, and he'd get beaten to the dugout by Ezekiel Carrera, who was jogging in from right field.
That's,
like,
crazy.
That's how slowly he was walking. Like, he was in dire straits. And as he was saying yesterday, still pitched pretty well.
Yeah.
With, like, a fastball that was like 84 to 86. You know, no fly. Like, a couple of pitches got hammered. Like, a couple of pitches got absolutely rocketed. And he walked a couple of guys, you know, and, like, he battled his command at times. But he still was reasonably effective, which is kind of incredible.
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of an exaggerated version of what we've seen from him for most of the year, where we're used to him throwing with not a ton of velocity. And it's not the first time he's dealt with back soreness this year. But usually it's a lot more mild. And usually he's up 88, 89. On the weekend, it was way reduced as far as velocity and mobility, and yet he still did get the job done. So I mean, it's impressive to see, but I guess where do you think the Blue Jays do go from here, and where should they be going from here?
Ryan Goins threw harder than Marco Estrada on the weekend. It's something that bears noting. Where do they go from here? Like, I don't think he should be starting again before the All-Star break. He really wants to. I don't see any reason why you need to do that when you have Drew Hutchison. When you can keep it, you can just slot him in there and keep everybody else on the regular turn, going to the All-Star break, and then set everything else up the way you want it to be coming out of the All-Star break. It sounds like Drew Hutchison's going to start Thursday anyway. Why force Marco Estrada into one of those starts on Friday? It feels like a pride move, like a thing where he just, like, yeah, I don't want to miss a start, a sense of pride thing. Marco Estrada's done things, you know, based on pride before in the past. Like, it seems like it just sets up so perfectly with the All-Star break, with the two off days coming out of it, with the way the Blue Jays rotation's looking right now, that you could give Marco Estrada, like, you know, a week and a half even off to get this thing right.
You could give him 15 days in the back data, give him 15 days in the DL, and he could pitch the fourth game out of the break. So that would be in Arizona.
So that worries me. Right. It'd be in Arizona. He'd have to swing the bat. And this happens swinging the bat. That's how he hurt himself.
Or he can stand in there again and not swing.
He doesn't want to do that.
Well, I know, but he doesn't want to be on the DL either, right?
He told us straight up, I'm not doing that.
But he's going to have to do, like, he probably didn't want to get four cortisone shots either, or however many it was.
I think he probably wanted to, because he got them in spring training and they worked wonders for him then, right? So I think he was probably like, yeah, let's do this thing.
The point being that the Blue Jays are picking from situations that aren't ideal here.
So, fair. So my other thing against giving him 15 days off would be, can you just step right back into a major league game? Do you need some sort of a ramp up? Do you need a minor league game where you throw 75, 80 pitches? Just to, you know, are you going to step right back in to max effort 115 pitches right after that?
I would guess that there are a number of pitchers around the league who will have 10-day layoffs because of the All-Star break.
Yeah.
You know, extended because you're, say you pitch the Thursday before and then you're the team's fourth starter coming out of the break. You might not pitch until that Wednesday, Tuesday or Wednesday. So it could be an extended break for a lot of pitchers. They're not going to go on rehab stints.
Those pitchers might throw sides in between. Yeah. They might do things like that. Marco Straw is not doing any of that right now.
Not right now.
Yeah. So
he could in a week, though, if they wanted him to.
Yeah, if he was feeling healthy enough. But if you're giving him these 15 days off, you kind of want him to be down, right? Like, I don't know if you want him doing anything. You want him getting this thing out. It's a tough balance.
Yeah, it is. And I agree with you that the idea of him starting, say, on Friday or Saturday, it seems, you know, you've got guys who are ready to go. You can roll with, at that point, you've got everyone else lined up. Dickey, Stroman, Hap, Sanchez, they can cover off your last games for you. And then you're good to go. You're good to head into the break and Estrada at that point. Whether he's on the DL or not, that's kind of a secondary question.
Yeah.
Because, of course, if he is in the DL, he can't pitch in the All-Star game. Something he would like to do. And I'm sure it's something the Blue Jays would like him to be able to do if he is healthy.
You don't have to DL him.
Right. So you can either DL him, which gives you an extra bench player, or you cannot, and then you have a short bench, but all right, he can come back and pitch in the first series.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to DL him. You could have R.A. Dickey pitch on that Sunday.
Yeah.
You could have Aaron Sanchez not pitch until the All-Star game. And if Aaron Sanchez made the All-Star team, like he could, you know, like you don't have to have Aaron Sanchez come back and pitch on that Sunday.
Yeah, it could be a way to give him an extended break too.
Yeah, you get him a little break, and you know, if he makes the All-Star game, you can go and he can pitch in the All-Star game. You can throw like kind of like a side in the All-Star game, right? Like just face three batters, throw a bunch of two-seamers like you would in a bullpen. That's that.
Yeah. And it's really tricky because Estrada's been so good, and Sanchez, you know, they're looking at his workload as well, of course, and trying to make sure that he's strong for the second half. But these two guys, you know, it's just impossible to imagine that the Blue Jays would have the same kind of success in the second half if they don't have these guys healthy and ready to go.
It just, it seems weird that they're not taking advantage of this, especially because the Blue Jays, they have the two off days kind of sandwiching that Arizona series. And then after that, for the rest of the season, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 off days. That's it for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
7 for the rest of the season. Like, it's not a lot. Yeah. Like, there's some long stretches of games in there over the rest of the season. Like, they've had a lot of off days recently. When you look at it, they had the two off days around the last time they played Arizona, right? And they've got, you know, the All-Star break and these two coming up here. You'd think this is a part of the schedule, especially playing weaker opponents as well. It's kind of something that you might want to take advantage of.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure.
All right. Well, I agree with going to a break, which is here on ATL. But when we come back, we'll talk Jose Bautista. We'll talk trade deadline. We'll talk Brett Cecil. We'll talk all things Blue Jays when we continue on At the Letters.
Blue Jays fans, it's the one podcast you don't want to miss. At the Letters with Ben Nicholson-Smith and Arden Zwelling. Check it out on sportsnet.ca and iTunes.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. We're on sportsnet.ca. We're on iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. It's deadline season. We're getting to a hot stove season. We're getting into July. Teams are settling into whether they're buyers, whether they're sellers. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of discussions going on right now. I think it's fairly obvious the Blue Jays are, or at least should be, buyers going into the trade deadline.
I agree. Yeah. They have a team that's good but flawed, and that's the perfect recipe for being a deadline buyer. I mean, you look around, there's some clubs where there aren't that many obvious flaws. The Blue Jays do have a few areas where I think they pretty clearly could upgrade.
Yes, absolutely. I would suggest that relief pitching is one of those. I would suggest that starting pitching is another one of those. Those are the two obvious ones, kind of under the radar spots that you think maybe the Blue Jays could be in need of an upgrade.
Here's the one that I would throw out there. I think if Jose Bautista needs more time to come back from turf toe, and now the expectation seems to be end of July, hopefully, the Blue Jays are saying.
That's what we heard, hopefully, end of July.
Which doesn't sound overly optimistic.
Turf toe is, I can't use that word on this podcast, it's tough. Turf toe is tough. Like, it's soft tissue injury. It's like, it's hard to get out of there. Like, it's not, I think that the name turf toe kind of takes away some of like the severity of it. Like, it is pretty, it's rough.
Agreed. And if that injury sidelines Batista until, say, the beginning of August or even longer, then you're looking at a month without one of your best players. And at that point, I think there's a case to be made for finding a right-handed hitting outfielder to platoon with Ezekiel Carrera in a complementary role in right field.
So you would want that to happen kind of earlier in July then?
I think if the Blue Jays get a sense relatively early in the month that Bautista is going to need some more time, then that would be the moment to say, all right, we're going to get a stopgap. You're not talking some franchise cornerstone player, but a stopgap, someone who maybe can give you a little bit more than what Junior Lake is giving you, and combine with Carrera in that sort of role. And it wouldn't hurt to be there as an insurance policy too, because Michael Saunders has battled some hamstring issues this year. Just having an extra right-handed hitting big league caliber outfielder on the roster would help.
Are there any names out there that stick out to you?
No one, you know, I haven't dug into it deep enough to really have a short list here, but I think that's the type of player that you can get at the deadline without giving up the farm.
What about Peter Borges? Right-handed sure. hitting outfielder, the Phillies.
Not a lot of power, but he gives you defense. That's something.
Bring you some speed, yep. Which is something that the Blue Jays don't have a ton of. And we've seen in recent years, John Gibbons likes to have some speed off of his bench, whether it was, you know, Dalton Pompey was on the playoff roster last year.
Yep.
Solely as a base runner.
And the Phillies would move him. That's the kind of guy.
Right?
Yeah, that's the kind of guy. And then the other thing is, you have to be able to cut bait when Batista comes back.
Right.
And so you're looking for guys who either have options or who you're willing to just say, see you later when he's back.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure if Peter Borges has options, but I do know he's only making $2 million, which is the same amount of money that Franklin Morales is making, and the Blue Jays don't seem to be in any rush to have Franklin Morales on their major league roster, so maybe $2 million doesn't mean that much to them. I think that's kind of like the ideal guy. Like, you think about other veteran outfielders in this game, like Coco Crisp, like some of those kind of like well-traveled guys who, can tend to shift around at trade deadlines. Those kind of guys would be out there as well.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of addition. But really, I think the focus will probably be on starting pitching and bullpen help. And I don't know if it's going to be an easy time to upgrade, because so many other teams are going to be looking for those same upgrades, whether it's the Rangers or the Dodgers, the Red Sox and Orioles within their division. There's so many clubs that need pitching, but to me, that's the Blue Jays' biggest need.
And it's tough because you don't want to really overpay for a reliever at the deadline, especially one with like an expiring contract that you're only going to get like 20 innings out of, and you've basically just kissed, a potential, a prospect away. And like, trade all the prospects, like get rid of them, that's fine. But like, it's, at the same time, you want to at least return some sort of value for what that asset is worth at the time. So you don't want to overpay for guys at the deadline,
yeah.
Especially relievers.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there's probably a tier of prospects the Blue Jays wouldn't trade from. I would be surprised if they traded from the guys who have the highest ceilings, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Anthony Alford. You could point to some of their pitching prospects, maybe.
Connor Green.
Yeah, I wonder if they'd move on Connor Green. But he could be in that discussion as well, as a guy that they really want to hold on to. Pompey is someone who probably starts for this team next year. I don't know if you're going to get better long-term by trading him, but at some point you have to be willing to trade talent too.
What kind of a reliever would you think the Blue Jays should be going after? Do you think a left-hander, a right-hander? What do you think they need?
I would think right-handed. I think Brett Cecil's return changes the look of this bullpen and gives them that lefty arm that they were lacking for so much of the season. So I think you focus on right-handed relievers, guys who could slot into a setup role. Maybe they're in the sixth or seventh inning along with Jason Grilly. And it could just be the same kind of addition that Mark Lowe was last year for this team. It doesn't have to totally transform the bullpen. As long as Asuna and Cecil are going well, then you've got a couple pieces who can really be shutdown guys. But you just need someone else who's inspiring a little bit more confidence than Drew Storen. Someone who's got more experience than Joe Biagini. And I think that tier of relievers is out there. Whether it's Neftali Feliz or even someone like Carlos Torres with the Brewers. I mean, those guys are out there if you're willing to give up some sort of piece.
The guy I would throw out is Brandon Kinsler with the Minnesota Twins. He's kind of in that Mark Lowe mold of like an older guy who didn't, have terrific numbers, last year, like earlier in his career, but has had a very nice season this year. He's kind of well-traveled. He's not a real sexy reliever. He doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but he just kind of gets the job done. So maybe he could be had for, kind of that lower tier of prospect that you're talking about.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And then you can just bolster your bullpen. At that point, you can option loop back and send Schultz to AAA. You still have those guys around that can help you in September. But I think there's a lot to be said for having that extra layer of relief help. And so I would think that the Blue Jays are probably spending a lot of the next few weeks looking around the league for guys just like that.
What do you think the starting pitching market's going to be like at the trade deadline? Because I'm not really seeing like a David Price this year.
I don't think there is one.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's really not a lot out there as far as pitching. So, I mean, if you're the Blue Jays, you're looking around, all right, there's Rich Hill, I guess. There are guys like Jeremy Hellickson that you could trade for. Maybe an Irvin Santana's out there. And then you get into the tier, and Hill probably belongs in this tier to some extent, with Julio Teheran. Guys like Drew Pomeranz, they're going to cost you a lot. And right. Because they do have control in cases of Sonny Gray and Julio Teheran and Drew Pomeranz, they are going to cost you big time prospects. I don't know if I see the Blue Jays shopping in that aisle, to borrow an Alex Anthopoulos metaphor.
I would look at the team that, you know, probably has some really useful pitchers to sell is in the Blue Jays division in the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Odorizzi, Smiley, like guys like that. And I just can't see a world where the Rays are trading those guys to the Blue Jays.
Right. For two reasons. First, the division. Second, because if the Rays are talking with the Rangers, as we've seen in rumors, or the Dodgers, those teams have better prospects than the Jays anyway. So in theory, you're going to get a worse return if you deal with Toronto, and you're going to have to face them a few times a year. I just don't think Tampa would do that.
Hello, Jeremy Hellickson.
I know.
You ready? So
yeah.
if what you're looking at is a pretty diminished starting pitching market out there, like a pretty poor one, does it almost make sense to just go forward with what you have plus Drew Hutchison? Does that almost make more sense?
It does to an extent, but then Drew Hutchison is your last line of defense. And yeah. If you're going to replace Aaron Sanchez with Hutchison at some point, well, what happens if Estrada's back tightens up? Or what right. happens if Hap, you know, sprains his ankle? Then who do you go to? There's really not an obvious answer in the upper levels of the Blue Jays minor league system. And maybe when you look at the organization that way and you see that they don't have a ton of pitching depth, maybe that's reason to go out there and acquire a starting pitcher who has some control, and then he can help you next year as well.
The Buffalo Bisons have been just like bleeding starting pitchers for like a couple of weeks now. Like, you know, Drew Hutchison is obviously up now. Wade LeBlanc was granted his release and is now pitching for Seattle.
Pitching well, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Good for him. Very happy for that guy. And Roberto Hernandez, the former Fausto Carmona, also granted his release. You'll see this kind of stuff happen around this time of year, whether guys had either opt-outs in their contract or things, you know, kind of unspoken agreements with the team that, hey, if I'm not on the major league roster by this time, you know, you got to give me some leeway here, whatever. But like Pat Venditti started for the Buffalo Bisons last week. Did you not see that?
No.
Pat Venditti started a game and went three innings.
Wow.
That's where the Buffalo Bisons are in terms of starting pitching right now. Like, that's the situation.
Right.
So there's, when you say Drew Hutchison's last line of defense, he absolutely is. Like, yeah. And he's in the majors right now, and he's going to start Thursday.
So I think there's a case to be made that, like, set this year aside, okay? Like, what about 2017? I know they have five starters in theory lined up.
Yeah.
In half, Estrada, Stroman, Sanchez, and Hutchison. So you could do a lot worse, but you need more than five, and there's no one knocking on that door. It's not like Connor Green has taken huge steps forward and is clearly ready as a big league starter. So I think there's a case to be made for adding someone with control for this year and for future years.
For sure. The Blue Jays, they'll also like sign like three, four, or five of those LeBlanc-type guys,
yeah.
right? Like this offseason. They'll try to build it out. That's essentially what they did this year.
Right.
Right? Like they, you know, Gavin Floyd was almost, you know, the Blue Jays' fifth starter. Until the last week of camp, he basically was, you
yeah.
know? So maybe Jesse Chavez is also a guy who needs to be mentioned in this discussion. Now that
yeah.
that kind of popped into my head when I mentioned Floyd, like, you know, Chavez is a guy who, you know, maybe you could, he doesn't even really need the, you know, like a minor league kind of buildup. Like you could just send him out there to throw 60 pitches one day. His next time out, he's 75 and then he's 90 and then he's just a starter.
And from what John Gibbons was saying earlier in the week, it sounds as though guys like Chavez and even Joe Biagini would be that next option beyond Hutchison.
Right. And so, yeah, and maybe the Blue Jays can get through to the end of the year with what they have. And it would be scary.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't think that this management group wants to trade prospects right now. And when you're looking at the starting pitching market, there's going to be so few yeah. options this
yeah.
year. Prices, I mean, you're paying premiums.
Yeah. So
everywhere.
Yeah. So maybe that's a case where you say, okay, we're going to get by now And then in the off season, you try to address those long-term
right.
concerns.
And then if you're looking to get guys for future years and guys with control, you know, like you said earlier, it's going to be cheaper in the off season to do it then. It's going to be easier to do it then.
At least you can involve more teams. You have more teams willing to move starters. Because let's say, for argument's sake, the Mets in the off season could move a starter.
For sure.
They're not doing that now, though. You would be very surprised if they move from a big league strength in the middle of a season.
This is an extreme seller's market.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this isn't the time that I'm looking to, like, you know, make trades like that. And, you know, it would be great if there's some guy who nobody has thought is available, who has control beyond this year, who can contribute to the stretch drive, who can pitch in the playoffs. It would be great if that guy's out there. I'm not convinced he is.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that that's a guy that you can acquire right now. Who knows? Maybe. But I feel like, you know, maybe I'm just kind of like predicting that in terms of starting pitching, I feel like the Blue Jays might stand pat.
I'd point to last year with what the Astros did in acquiring Mike Fiers, where he's controllable. He's nothing special, but he's someone who's helping them this year. He helped them last year. Maybe that deal's out there. I am sure that the Blue Jays are calling around to see if those deals exist.
What does exist presently on the Toronto Blue Jays roster are a bunch of kind of smaller storylines, kind of odds and ends that we're going to quickly touch on as we wrap up the pod here. First of those is Ezequiel Carrera, your everyday right fielder in the place of Jose Bautista. What have you thought of everyday Zeke?
I think it's worked out pretty well for the Blue Jays. I think it's worked out better than I expected, maybe better than they expected. And you look at the numbers that he's been able to put together, they're pretty strong. He's got an OPS over 800. OBP hovering around 400, and of course it's not quite everyday playing time, but he's coming up on 200 plate appearances. Even if you dial it back to last year, 150 games with the Blue Jays these last two seasons, he's got a 351 OBP. I mean, he's been pretty productive since joining the Blue Jays.
He's been a nice fourth outfielder. I think that's where you ideally want Ezequiel Carrera.
Yeah.
I think playing every day since Jose Bautista went down. Last time Jose Bautista played was June 16th. So since that point, Ezequiel Carrera has a slash line of 224, 366, 379. Not fantastic.
No.
The one thing he is doing that I didn't really realize as part of his game is walking a lot. He's walked 11 times in those 15 games that he's played since Jose went down. So, like, credit to him. Like, he's showing kind of a plate approach that I didn't really know he had. But I think that he is very much, well, not like super getting super exposed quite yet, but if this continues, I think you're going to see him get a bit more exposed than he already has been.
Yeah, I think you're right. Career high in walks probably does not hurt to be hitting in front of some of the most dangerous hitters in the American League.
Kevin Pillar told me that just means guys are going to throw you strikes.
Well, Kevin Pillar is his own type of leadoff hitter, that's for sure. But Carrera, you know what? He's been good. I think too. Like you look at him going into the season. Is he even going to make the team? There was all this discussion around Siciliani and Junior Lake. Dominic Brown, where are those? I mean, Lake's now in the big leagues, but, you know, I think
where are those guys? Junior Lake's sitting on the bench. He's ready to go.
He's right beside
him. He's right there.
We know where they are. But the point is that Carrera has distinguished himself. He's made it clear that the Blue Jays were right to give him that job. And I think, too, it's a little easier to pencil him in to the Blue Jays roster next year. You know, he's someone that you want to keep around at this point.
Yeah, he's a useful player. He's, you know, he just kind of flies on the radar, quiet, useful player. Love those quiet, useful people. I consider myself one of them.
Nice. I didn't know that about you.
People who are not quiet, one of those is Marcus Stroman, who, and this was kind of lost in the 19-inning debacle that was that game against the Indians, but Marcus Stroman kind of looked good against the Indians. He went 6 2/3, struck out 6, 5 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk. Looked like Marcus Stroman. It looked like the guy that we had kind of gotten accustomed to over the first 2 months of the season.
It's almost as if they didn't have to option him to AAA. It's almost as if that bullpen stint wasn't necessary. And not to say that he's out of trouble, because clearly he's got to show a lot more consistency. This has to happen start over start. But we saw on Friday against the Indians in that crazy game that Marcus Stroman does have a lot more to offer than he showed in the 8 starts previous.
I'm very interested to see him against the Kansas City Royals tonight, because that is a team that doesn't strike out a lot, doesn't walk a lot, makes a ton of contact. And this contact against Marcus Stroman has been very hard. When he was really struggling, we had cited the bad ball, the exit velocity stuff like a million times. Like, he was getting squared up. So I'll be very interested to see how he approaches a Kansas City Royals team that really likes to put the bat on the ball and how they do against him.
It's a good point. And I'm sure that his struggles aren't over. He's going to have more starts or even stretches of starts this year, or at least in his big league career, where he looks lost and he's getting hit hard. I guess the important thing is just to be able to get results in and around those struggle spots. And I think at the end of the season, he's got the innings, he's got the ground balls. At this point, there's one positive start there. He's going to need to put a few more of those together. But I think it's fair to say that ability is there.
Yes. Ari Dickey's ability is always there. He throws a knuckleball. He doesn't have UCL. The guy can throw that thing a zillion times. Here's the thing about Ari Dickey. His ERA at the end of April was 6.75 after his first five starts of the season. Pretty bad. His ERA in 13 starts since then, 3.04, which is like better than, you know, normal Ari Dickey. Like, it's better than kind of like average Ari Dickey. This is like, we've seen good Ari Dickey for a while now, and it's not really getting noticed. But like, this is like Ari Dickey. When I think of Ari Dickey, I think of 200 innings, 4 ERA.
Yep.
That's what I think of. Since April, we've seen a 3 ERA.
He's been really good.
It's been a run better than I would expect him to be.
Yeah. It's weird how similar Ari Dickey's seasons in Toronto have been. Because he's been here 4 years now. It's not a short period of time. And it sure seems as though every season there's a really rough stretch in April. And then he just gets into this groove where he is remarkably consistent and effective.
Yes, absolutely. He had the strikeout pitch going last night, which was, I think, a little promising. Last night was kind of the ideal conditions for the knuckleball. It was humid. There was a bit of a wind blowing out to the outfield. That Ari Dickey likes those conditions. So it was really, and you could see, like, he was kind of talking after the game, like in those last 18 inches before the plate, his knuckleball was moving a lot. He was saying that's why he was getting so many strikeouts.
Yeah, it's really big to have guys like that in the rotation, even if they're not in consideration for any kind of all-star game, just to have them logging those innings. He can keep you in those blowout games, or he can keep your bullpen from getting overexposed after a blowout game. He's the kind of guy who just, in the course of a season, does add a fair amount of value.
Quickly, in a week, Chris Colabella will be eligible to start a rehab assignment. You can go 10 days on a rehab assignment, and then it's, the Blue Jays have to either option him to the minors or bring him back to the majors or do something with him because the suspension will be over. Interesting. John Gibbons told us he's going to do it at Buffalo. You know, if Chris Colabella goes to Buffalo and rakes, you might need him on this team.
Yeah, you could. And it would depend how the rest of the pieces fit together, whether Batista's back,
right?
How everyone else is hitting. But yeah, I think that having an extra bat around is never a bad thing. And at that point, a lot of the drama that surrounded Colabella early in the season will have disappeared. And I think that it's almost easier in a sense once a team is clearly in a pennant race, where you're just in that pennant race, and it becomes less about the distracting factors. It's just, hey, who's going to help this team win the game tonight? And that might make it easier for the Blue Jays to make their decisions. I don't think they're going to put him on there just because he's well-liked, but I don't think that they would keep him off the roster because he served a suspension.
Yeah, if he was a real piece of trash human being, it would be a bit different, but clearly his teammates like him. The coaching staff likes him. You know, Gibby's been in contact with him. He told Gibby he's been raking at extended spring. I think the most likely case is Chris Colabella gets optioned to Buffalo when his suspension is up. But then you see, you never know when there might be a need for him in the majors. Like you said, he's a good bat to have.
And he's also a guy on reserve. If after the deadline, you can't really add guys as easily, he's someone you can add. Call him up. Boom. You've got a right-handed bat.
Absolutely. We're going on reserve for a week on ATL, but thanks for coming along with us. Our producer, Sam McKee, is on Twitter at Sam A. McKee. I'm on Twitter at Arden Zwelling. Ben's on Twitter at B. Nicholson Smith. We're on sportsa.ca. We're on iTunes. Get at us. Thanks for coming along. This has been At the Letters.